Hi, I can't believe you're there. I can't believe I found you here in this place of the world that exists. I didn't see you there. Over there that way.
Yeah.
How did you get in here?
God, welcome to the TOVG podcast.
What are you doing here in my house?
I'm Jimmy Sundu. That's George Weedman. We got Matt Visual here.
Just showing.
Hi. Welcome to our podcast about games and video games.
Yeah. Games that you play with videos.
Yeah.
Games of videos that you play with your hands.
Welcome to our three-person roundtable on the interactive medium.
Or with other parts.
Barely interactive picture contests. So I've been doing a thing in videos lately.
Sure.
Where I've been trying to be a little more personal and wacky and on the nose and tongue in cheek. Every now and then you hear like this George yell kind of echoing out into the distance, cut off by a lower volume envelope. Yeah, that.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering. Yeah. I'm wondering if that's a angle I should keep going with. I wonder how people truly feel about there occasionally being a muffled George yell in videos nowadays.
Well, I can tell you that I like it.
Thanks.
I'm going to do a montage of all the George yells.
And oh my God,
there are two of them. There are two of them so far. Maybe I can keep it going and contribute, but... But
as
right
the
now,
years go by.
I'm still working my way through Nier Automata, and mm-hmm. that thing's taken its sweet time. I mean, I don't know, not really, way faster than the first game, but I still am facing that moment where I'm like, oh God, I keep playing the game and stuff keeps happening, but my deadline for the video is getting sooner and sooner, so I really have to like work to put myself in a relaxed mm-hmm. state of mind to be able to enjoy the thingy. And there's still thingies to be enjoyed there. I'm having like the problem though that I had kind of sort of in the first game, where I'm mm-hmm. really having to juggle my love for weird stories that have like, oh, I get that required college sociology class reading author reference versus my utter disdain for animu melodrama where beautiful looking people beat each other up and then kind of whine for a few minutes in the middle of the fight about how they believe in their friendships and sacrifice that it requires to be good friends with people apparently in these universes, and then they finish the fight while bosses don't kill them in the middle of their monologues, and that's I guess what I find less interesting about this game, because it's really
going back and forth.
Yeah. It's really, really going back and forth from anime and back. And
I don't like anime, George? I feel like just went to the movies and watched anime.
Yeah, we watched an anime. I think the thing is that half the time anime becomes a kind of pandering trash can of tropes that you can just throw into the trash can to satiate a very, very small portion of a small audience without having to try very hard to make them happy.
You know what else does that? Video games?
Yes. Everything does that, though. Like, you can't just throw all anime into this, like, little single pile. Yeah.
Like, I'm understand, not throwing like, the... all anime into the pile. I think some anime works harder for your money than others. It's just,
And trust me, there is a lot of, like, you liked Your Name. There is a lot of anime that's like Your Name. Or even better, I would say. Trust me. As you just missed, but what you hear about is obviously the fire engines in the background of your
that's
apartment.
The anime police, they're coming to take George.
Now George. But what you mostly hear about is the jiggly boobs and all this craziness that mostly people point out.
And no, I'm not talking about all anime. I'm just talking about the garbage anime, and the more I also talk to people who like want me to get into anime, the more even I hear them reluctantly like trying to hold back and being like, wait a minute, no, most anime is garbage. I need to stop. And that's that's not very encouraging for me. See, okay, here's the thing. Yeah, it's part of like the jiggly boobs and butts and how little effort like that seems to take to satisfy an audience compared to writing actually interesting stories. But it's also how absurd a lot of costumes and character designs get in their quest to tick off the boxes to a degree that has not been ticked before. Like in the first game, Nier's costume is basically all belts and zippers and crazy hair. Even though it's they fashion. Like redesigned the character to look more appropriate for a Western audience, they still keep his belts and zippers and on. And the like gothic Lolita dresses that the characters in this one wear is something that I still have not been able to fully comfortably swallow. And I
actually quite like that aspect of, I mean, it's not just anime, but
you like belts?
Like, yeah, belts and zippers specifically. That's the only thing I'm talking about. No.
And pretty dresses with lace all over.
I love the gothic Lolita design that they did for Automata. I think that's kind of the fun of anime is that they've established that anime is kind of allowed to get away with stuff that's so over the top that it just becomes normalized. I mean, you like fucking Bayonetta, and that's exactly what Bayonetta's character design
Bayonetta
is.
Bayonetta just seems a little more genuine about it, whereas with Nier, it almost seems like they're trying to pretend that it's normal.
Really, though? Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I can see where you're coming from. I have played neither, so I will speak on neither, but I think it's the same principle, and it might just be appealing to different people, if that makes sense.
Bayonetta is a comedy with ridiculous-looking characters in a ridiculous universe, and Nier is like a super serious, sappy, almost tearjerker with ridiculous-looking characters in a ridiculous-looking universe.
I don't know, man. A lot of people like that, myself included. Take Final Fantasy Tactics Advance. Go look at those character designs. Looks like someone was like, all right, so just start drawing layers of clothing. And
I'll
stop you when I get back. And then they like took a 4-hour drive. And then you end up with people who have like 7 pants that are all at different heights on their legs.
I
think it looks great, but it's ridiculous.
All those pants?
They absolutely don't, but I love it. It looks great.
See, okay, if like there's a character who jokes about how many pants they're wearing, and if the character artist was like making all the uses of all those different pairs of pants, then it's like veering towards the Bayonetta territory where all this completely over the top pandering aesthetic stuff going on is like there for an honest effort for everyone to have fun. And Nier, it's like they don't really acknowledge how silly all the characters filling up these frames are.
They'll acknowledge it? I don't know. I feel like it feels silly comparing the two, because Bayonetta is like way out there. Like from the stuff I've seen, like I have not played it, but I've watched enough to know what happens when you do combos and everything like that and all these shots, and I'm like,
yeah, your character's outfit is animated as part of the weapon that you're doing combos with, and the character themselves is built to do incredibly weird looking things that the little girl flipping around in Nier can't really do because she can't
because
hold the sword
because
it's floating around on her back instead. It seems like she's not made for the weapons she's slashing around.
I don't know.
She's
I understand
a robot,
what you're saying.
Though. What the hell are you
I
talking about?
I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, I absolutely don't think that something that is over the top needs to be like blatantly self-aware about it. Mm-hmm. Because like then you get shit like Yooka-Laylee, which is like, well, I just gave myself a tutorial on the way in, so I'm fine. It's like, fuck off. Sorry, I know a lot of people thought it was charming, but I felt like Yooka-Laylee was like, you know what Deadpool does? Let's do that, but really shitty. Ooh. And even then, Deadpool kind of does it really shitty, too. So, like, it was funny like a decade ago. Sorry.
But see, wait. The movie? You're talking about the movie?
I'm talking about Deadpool the character. Like, that's his shtick, is like he breaks the fourth wall and he's like, right. Yo, reader, do you see that? And it's like, yeah, that was a good joke again.
See, yeah, but then, House of Cards also does it, and they do it in a great way. I think
House of
Deadpool
Cards does it in a film noir way. Like, in film noir, the character always like goes off to the side to explain their thoughts. Mm. But that's how I always saw it. I didn't see it as like Underwood being like wonder what all the people at Netflix at home are thinking about this.
I'm definitely not protecting Ukulele because I was never interested. I was interested, but like the character design kind of turned me off. So I was never excited until it actually the reviews came out. And now that the reviews are out, it's like, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
Like near Auto Tomato doesn't go all the way towards that. I'm breaking the fourth wall to make a cheap joke side of the equation, but it does get super duper self-aware and does it in a way that on the other hand seems to me not pretentious or pandering, in a genuine pursuit of making like completely the pants on head, balls to the wall, off Broadway avant-garde New York City performance art theater out of this situation where they're throwing completely oddball characters into an oddball world to maybe disarm the viewer for the sake of switching the tonal whiplash to something way cooler than anime people fighting for their friends. Cause I had a hunch that the premise of this game involved these cute little wind-up toy robots, like discovering social constructs one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And the side quests in the game keep hitting this recurring theme of the little cute toy robots trying to discover a purpose, and then maybe exploding themselves now that they're content, or going on to live a life following that purpose because they're now content, versus robots just following the thing that they're instructed to do because they're robots. The themes of the game tend to create humor out of these robots trying to find purposehood. And you have this theme get followed up on a lot, to the point where revelations later in the game, to where spoiler territory goes, really reinforce that angle that I was just looking at and just describing, like with evidence almost. Like, it starts dropping names that that are real historical figures related to the topics that they're throwing around. And I was like, oh, okay, I like this. But then it'll switch modes again to a different thread of drama that's all completely related to characters like falling in love with each other and fighting for their friends. That's the point where I'm like, oh, okay, this seems like it's come straight out of left field. I'm kind of sort of seeing myself tune out now.
Well,
did you just yawn? That was perfect.
I woke up 27 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We started the podcast call 26 minutes ago. So, yes, I just yawned, but it was not because George's talk was boring. It's because I'm tired.
Because that's what...
And, okay, well, sorry. I don't have anything to say about Nier Automata because I've never played it.
Nier Potato Patata. Hakuna Matata.
Nier Hakuna Matata.
Nier Anime Tomato.
See, so this, like, this, I feel like this is what people who are playing through the Metal Gear Solid series as grown-ass adults instead of babby kids who immediately think everything's good.
Yeah.
Matt, is this what it's like? Is this what it feels like to play Metal Gear Solid as a cynical, grown old man?
Yeah, when playing with, especially like the fourth one, and then I went to Peace Walker and I was like, what is this garbage? I just couldn't bring myself. I'm like, this is like some repetitive, like,
the car alarm again.
it's Kojima coming.
This has been happening while I try to sleep. Anyways.
And we see, and then you hear George. Yeah, that's cheers.
Okay, anyways, we're talking about anyways, the cringe yes, curve, the Metal yes, Gear Solid cringe curve.
Yeah, it gets that way. It gets that way. Like, I understood, like, as from the beginning, like Metal Gear 1, 2, and then I went to the Solid series. It was like, okay, this is great. And then it starts to take a dive as it gets more and more crazy and more plot points come about and more goofiness comes in. And I guess that kind of like, not anime goofy, like a little bit of a little bit, but not a lot. It's done in a very stern way, I guess you can say.
Are you still talking Peace Walker?
Yeah, well, no. I mean, just the series in general. Well, like, once after 3, when it gets to 4, and, you know, like, 4 is very... It feels a little anime-ish. That's yeah, where and I, you get I, the beasts, and they're, like, in these tight skin suits, and they're like, oh, ooh! And you're like, oh, come on. Like, this is...
There's a scene in 4 where Big Mama is in the frame in great pain on the floor. She raises her arm up to a first person point of view of old Snake with his stupid looking mustache, looking down at the camera, looking concerned. Then the camera pans out again to a third person view of the both of them, looking at each other during some serious dramatic moment. And then a naked, hairless monkey with a diaper crawls in from the lower bottom left of the corner of the frame and offers them a can of soda. And just like everything, every character on the frame is of a design and universe that sounds and looks and feels like the exact opposite of everything else in the frame. And there are shots like that in the Nier games. In this one, there will be a shot of like a Transformers Michael Bay looking robot having a monologue about the 18th century sociology and the role of the proletariat when determining what their own identity must be. And then the camera will zoom out to like Akihabara Mado with like a poofy frilly lacy skirt and garters, holding a giant samurai sword, wearing a blindfold, looking at the Transformers robot, and she'll say something really sarcastic and douchey and mean, like, I don't know, why won't you just die? And then the camera will pan to the other side of the screen where there will be a little 8-year-old boy wearing like 18th century Napoleonic buttons up his black formal wear blazer attire with his blindfold on. And then the camera will pan over a little bit more and you'll see like Emil, the little boy with the moon face from Majora's Mask, grinning into view. And like all of these characters being on the frame at once, I can't handle it. It drives me nuts.
All right, and marking that down with a marker in Audition, totally putting some sort of music behind that. I'm thinking Ecstasy of Gold from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Just that was quite the fucking monologue. Wow. I don't even know what it was about, and honestly.
Well, that's a guy who's played a lot of Metal Gear games. Lots of monologues.
I just finished up the B run. I'm moving on to the other endings, and my mind is gone.
B run? What?
B run. Yeah, there's an A, B.
Run.
So there's a C, D, and E ending, although I think I already got the K and the T ending. So those just got thrown in the pile with the rest of them.
How short is this game that you're playing?
It's like 8 to 12 hours, right?
No, I did my first run in 17. But ending B went by much, much faster. I skipped all the optional content and rushed through that one in, like, I want to say 9 hours.
Just for Matt's sake, there are a few endings that literally take, like, 10, 20 minutes.
Yes. Oh,
okay. Yeah. I was like, about to say.
Like, one of the you collected this ending is, like, die in the tutorial.
Sorry, if I do that, if I dissect of like a game like that, like Metal Gear went into those realms, it's hard to really talk about it.
Yeah,
after I don't know, I don't know how many times you have to play it. Like that's every day you're playing a 9 hour, you're doing a 9 hour shift in Nier Automata. You know, that's pretty
yeah. Whew,
that's pretty rough. I don't know how you're not burnt out by the end of that, but I'm guessing you're doing a different type of review.
Well, I'm also deep. I'm gonna be doing a topical, right?
Yeah.
I guess I figured try to explain the themes.
I figured as much, because a review, you'd be like, well, this game, I'm tired.
And no one likes those reviews.
I remember my buddy Jimmy Wetzel, when Smash 4 came out, he did a review that was, it was 2 minutes long, and 1 minute and 50 seconds of it was building up like the Smash history, like of like the history of the games, and like what, where Smash 4 is, like, oh, this is like the newest installment in the series, and everyone's really excited for it. Then he's like, so now onto the review, and it just cuts to a deadpan live action shot of him, and he's like, it's all right, and then fucking video ends.
Yay.
Yeah,
I'm not super duper burnt out. In fact, I'm now regarding my deadline as more of a temporary rule rather than a hard and fast rule after the Zelda debacle. So I think I'm going to play it for 2 more days and then put a video out rather than trying to rush it out for the rest of the day, because my mind is gone from the lack of sleep of pushing away at this incredibly trippy game to the thought of having to push out an incredibly trippy video about said trippy game. I think I need to take my sweet time for this one.
She has some tomato soup.
Auto tomato soup.
Just sip some tomato soup. Everything's tomatoes. Just in your room. Just tomatoes.
It's still like good, clean fun, though. I mean, granted, I'm playing through it twice, but the second time through, you get a new character who can hack stuff, so that's neato, I guess.
There's also another character down the line that has a very unique mechanic that I've heard about. I believe her name is A2.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what she'll play like, but they keep hinting that there's something involved in her later on.
I think it was Co-Optional that I was listening to a few weeks back, but somebody like just like came out and blatantly said like what the thing was, and I was like, wow, that's fucking weird and cool. Yeah. Like, very Platinum, so I'm sure you'll enjoy that when you get to it.
But yeah, it seems like it's a much more graceful spin on the, hey, play this game multiple times concept when they make sure that it plays pretty differently every time.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I mean, dare we mention yet again, bring this skeleton back from the grave, but Undertale is like the hallmark of that.
At least, for
most people.
Agreed. In fact, I think I was mentioning Undertale a bit. It's a brand of, let's see, what is Undertale the opposite of? Grill charcoal, I don't know.
Grilled charcoal.
I was just thinking of something that might be the opposite of video games for
grilled charcoal.
Video games are like fun, clean electronic products. Grill charcoal is like a dirty, nasty, dry analog product.
Alright, I'll take it. That's actually pretty well.
Wait, I thought you were talking about charcoal that you use to grill, and you just
that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, no, that is the opposite of a video game, is a piece of charcoal.
Oh, the grill, though.
What charcoals have you guys been playing this week?
Go first, Jimmy. You know, you got a lot on that list there. I'm
going to
let you go
first. Got this extensive list of in-depth gameplay that I've been digging into.
I just saw it.
Okay, so I will go through my bullet points as such. I played Mega Man 02 for 5 minutes this week so I can capture footage for the video I put out.
Wow, how was it?
It was really good. It was. It really was.
Now, the whole 5 minutes. Are you going to use the whole 5 minutes or just a chop of them?
I used roughly 40 to 50 seconds of the footage.
Ah, yes. Fascinating.
Funny enough, that small amount of footage, I got like at least 6 or 7 comments that were like, yo, I see Mega Man 02, I click the fucking like button. And I was like, okay, dude, calm down.
Mission accomplished.
And then the next bullet point, I made a GIF of a clip of Titanfall 2 from probably a month or two ago when I played it.
Wow,
so that
how
I
was
can
it?
Market my video. It was pretty cool. Still not getting used to Photoshop's export to web legacy feature taking like 10 years to load, but like, you know,
yeah,
it works.
Where it also
gets
like
the job done.
Brings up a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet onto you.
Right.
As soon as you press the save for web button, you're just like, oh, I just want to save a GIF, not launch a rocket into space.
Yeah, it reminds me of all those times that I accidentally clicked browse in Adobe Bridge, and then you're like, well, might as well just go take a shower while this happens.
I have a new control center instead of a desk now. There's so many options it gives you. It's too many.
And then I've been playing Diablo 3, and I am farther in Diablo 3 seasonal than I've ever been before, because they have lists of achievements, and if you get like all the ones, for example, you do your season journey, which is the part 1, 2, 3, and 4, and those are like pretty straightforward. Those are like, oh, you know, get a bounty, run a greater rift. It's just like, you know, do the thing. But then it gets into like Slayer and Conqueror, which are like ranking up, and you get a better like border, and you get like stash tabs and stuff. Like you can get cool like cosmetic rewards to show that you've like, oh, I took my season really far. And I'm like 3 ranks above the farthest I've ever been in a season before. And it's weird, but like I'm trying, the last thing I need to do to get the neat orange border is a conquest, one more conquest. And those are like fucking stupidly hard things or stuff that takes a million years of grinding. And the one that I'm considering is beat the entire campaign, all 5 acts in 1 hour.
Oh, what? How?
Yeah.
How?
Honestly, you should look up videos. It's fascinating to watch. People basically, they run max speed builds. Everything is movement speed stats, and they have the abilities that let them teleport or roll or whatever, just like a bunch of times. And it doesn't require you to play the campaign on any difficulty, so they just play it on normal. So since they have like the equivalent of like 18 difficulty levels above normal gear and abilities, any ability they do one-shots anything in the game. So you just like fucking Sonic the Hedgehog your way through every level, just like rolling, stop, kill boss, roll. It's hilarious, but it requires good RNG and some memorization. So I don't know if I'll do it, but I'm going to try.
Holy cool. crap. Has it, when you say challenge, how do they deal with challenge now with your character? Is it just based on just like, you know, positioning?
How do you mean?
Like challenge meaning like, are they just spawn enemies that are like unbeatable, like how they used to, or are they kind of balance that out? Because you're playing by yourself, right? Most of the time, or
I typically play with 1 or 2 friends to run rifts together. But as far as difficulty goes, they used to do where you would run through the story mode, and each time you'd get progressively more difficult, right? Where it was like hell and nightmare and those difficulties. Now it goes like normal, expert, master, and something else, and then it starts into the torment difficulties, and there's torment 1 through 13, and those are like massive jumps of difficulty between each one. So I actually really like the system, because you could just set it to whatever difficulty you want. So if you're like, I really want to get a chance to get good gear and have a challenge, you can just like crank it up to torment 8, or you can be like, I just want to run through this campaign act real quick. You could just set it down to torment 1 and have like a nice raffle stomp. I like, you could really fine tune it to make it like exactly where you want to be challenged. So it's pretty neat in that way.
Okay.
So what have you been playing, Matthew? That's disgusting, Matthew.
Oh. Well, okay. So
this, I don't even know if George knows what that's from.
George, do you know what that's from?
No.
When you were out to Japan and Matt was on that week, we had Lee Forrest first, and Matt made some joke that was like kind of crude, and Lee got real close to his mic and he was like, "That's disgusting, Matthew."
So he did that movie trailer voice he does.
Yeah, and it's great because I have clean audio of it that I can go and clip and use whenever I want. I haven't done it yet, but I really should.
The lore thickens.
Yeah. The lore definitely thickens. Well, okay. So I've been trying to make time with my ridiculous schedule from work, which I hate, to play some stuff. And yeah, that's been going well. All right. So what I've played, let me stop. Like this podcast is quickly becoming George plays games while the other two guests talk to George. So I actually set up my VR properly. Oculus actually updated their stuff for 360 tracking. So if you have at least three sensors or more, it's actually pretty good now. Like, even outside of how they want you to set up yourself, because I want to set it up how I want to set it up. And I have mine mounted to the wall. I 3D printed some ceiling mounts to mount up three of my sensors. And I have it like basically on the opposite ends of my room. So I can get as much coverage as possible. So I had that set up and I have I clear out like pretty much the whole middle row for filming and basically VR. So I finally got a chance to catch up on a couple games I've been wanting to play for a while, which is Robo Recall. And I've been wanting to play Arizona Sunshine. I don't know if you guys ever heard of that one.
Yeah.
I heard of the first one, not the second, though.
Arizona Sunshine is like pretty popular. It's like a co-op VR VR experience, like with zombies,
zombies in the sun.
Zombies in the sun, yeah, and and like the voice acting is really good. Like it wraps you in. Like as soon as you start it up, he calls the zombies Freddy and stuff. And I don't know, like you have to watch the beginning to kind of understand what I'm talking about. But it's very, he's obviously lonely. You know, and he's just kind of making fun of a crappy situation. Maybe he's a little crazy. I haven't played too far in yet. I would say like the graphics and everything, it looks pretty great. I've been running into the George syndrome, you know, where I want to move now that I don't get sick anymore. So, I've been not liking teleporting because I want to move and shoot a lot. Even though what I end up doing is obviously just using, I have a whole room. So room scale and walking around and shooting people. That's like the best thing to do. You find a nice spot and you basically go ham in your, you know, if you have a decent space, to set up all your stuff at. If you're using the Vive or the Oculus, you have a decent space, you'll be able to like move around and get away from things and shoot them, which is great. Because if you don't, then I don't know, like it starts to annoy me with teleporting. You play this guy. You could play it co-op through the story, which is great. I haven't got a chance to try that out yet, but that's like one of the first ones I've seen that you can play co-op through a story, and I want to experience that really badly. You know, it has like resource management with it as well. You have a bad aim, you will waste a lot of ammo, and there's a limited amount of ammo that you have to find in like cars or randomly in crates around, you know, different areas when you're walking around. So you have to kind of conserve your ammo, and then of course different guns. So it you know, so far it's looking pretty good. The only thing I would say about it is that the aim is a little off for me. There's something wrong with it, and it spawned this huge discussion, like, on the internet from people who are ex-military and everything like that. Like, oh, the aim is clearly off because I shoot guns every weekend at the, you know, blah, blah, blah. Or I've been to the war, and I, you know, like, it's crazy. And it's like, there's both sides. People are saying it's okay. People are saying it's not. And it's like 50-50. I obviously was having problems with it. That's why I looked it up. Because when you aim the iron sights, you kind of close one eye naturally and you line it up. And it tends to whiff a little bit. And some people are saying that there's a cone and there's, like, you know, just like kind of real guns, there's like the odds that it'll hit in that, like, small little cone there. So you have to kind of get it right at the marker, or you kind of have to make sure you pull the trigger softly so you're not shaking the controller when you're pulling the trigger, like naturally people who don't shoot guns do, that you learn in training, obviously.
Yeah, especially since the controller is not going to have nearly as much weight as, like, a, you know, a gun, an actual gun. Yeah. So it doesn't stabilize itself automatically. You're waving around, you know, a 0.1 ounce plastic stick.
Yeah, basically like holding cameras and doing handheld shots with a huge camera.
Right.
Yeah, compared to like a little tiny little GoPro.
Like your phone.
Yeah. It's not going to look right. And some people were like, there's this like big thing because I've played Onward and all those, and I never had a problem, you know, with closing one eye and shooting targets from far away. So it's quite interesting. I haven't jumped back into that one yet to try to see like, what I was doing wrong. I did jump back into Robo Recall, which is I think it was made by a well-known developer. It's like, it's a free game, but it's like three levels that you can play, and it's like, it's voice acting, it's like high grade, like it's good, like the animation's good. It's more of a like those games where you're getting a multiplier and you're doing combos and stuff like that.
Right.
And it's like these quirky two AIs are talking to you like, oh, the Robo Recall, there is a malfunction with the robots. And by the way, just to mention, Robo Recall is not responsible for any malfunction. Everything is human error. And blah, 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 blah. And you're like, you're sent out to do it. And so you get sent out to basically clean up the robots who are acting funny. And they go off of that. And it's like you can see that there's a little bit of a deeper story there. You know, you're juggling acts, if you do juggling acts, headshots, stuff like that. I'm not too into these types of games. I do like a story and everything to go with it. I think I've come to a point where I've played a lot of VR games, and I just don't want to play another game where it's like, oh, multiplier and stuff. I just want to play a story. I want to play a story. I want to play something different.
Now, do you mean that's a real game for, like, or just any story at all will do?
So what was the first thing you said? What?
Do you mean like a real meaty story that is an actual video game instead of a tech demo toy?
Yes.
Or just any story, do you?
Yeah, I want a real story, like a meaty story, not just some like quick whatever story. Like I like Chronos was pretty good for like a starter, you know, but I want something even meatier than that, which is like kind of like a Dark Souls thing. It was a long time ago when this came out. But I want more stuff like that, and I haven't seen much other than like Arizona Sunshine, which is definitely like a more story into it for sure. And it's co-op, which is ridiculous. And there's something that's kind of like Zelda that I also have, The Vanishing Realms. I think it's called Vanishing Realms. And it's not, there's not like a, there's like story, but it's not like in your face. And you know, you can play through chapter one where you're kind of going through and it's more atmospheric and stuff like that. I would love to see, like, of course, it's, you know, it's a small indie developer, so you can't really expect a full-fledged, like, voice acting and all this type of stuff to go with it. But, like, that's also a good thing that I would be interested in playing more of, even though there's only, like, a couple chapters out on that, because it is from an indie. Like, the most people who are making the most interesting stuff nowadays are the indie guys. So you'll see a lot of the indie guys making really cool concepts on Steam, I would say. I said the best stuff, I would say, is open VR stuff. Oculus needs to get on their grind. because a lot of the stuff that come out there are, oh yeah, it's okay. It's good. It's good. Like, super hot. But, you know, I would like to see more stuff dive in. Like, but just to say anything about Robo Recall, it's fun. It's free if you have Oculus or Vive, because you can play with the Vive too with using Revive. It's a fun little game if you like to shoot people. but I wanted to do a little bit more. And there's something satisfying with the way they do the physics in that game, because you can grab the robots. Because the gunplay is great. Like, the gunplay is really great. That's why it was weird going from that with Arizona Sunshine, because the gunplay in Arizona Sunshine was very different. It has a real touch to it. A little bit harder to aim. You have to be very precise instead of arcadey, like Robo Recall. Mm-hmm. Because, like, enemies will be naturally coming to you, and there's different types of enemies that run up to you. Enemies will, like, you know, jump from behind you and stuff like that. And you could literally, like, grab them out the air and throw them. And there's, like, this slight vibration that happens with that that makes it feel like you're actually doing it. It's really, really good. Even, like, when you were to grab a robot, grab his head, break it off, you can, like, almost you feel like the tension, and you throw it at somebody else. Or you could grab a bullet at the, you know, out the air and throw it back at somebody, or grab a robot's arm and break it off and beat them with it. And you feel there's like a slight vibration that's just enough to make it feel not real, but it immerses you. And I think that's, like, so good. So good. Yeah. All games should have that, I would say.
I'm a big fan of good haptic feedback. Like, when done right, it can really, really, like, aid an experience. But it seems like we haven't had much in the way of rumble in a few years now.
What about the Switch and their HD rumble? You can feel the ice cubes.
Don't you fucking talk shit about the Switch HD rumble. That shit's so cool.
I don't know. We actually had a chance to try it out a few weeks ago, and I think me and Matt were both a little cautious about it.
Like, we couldn't figure out how many balls were inside the controller. Was it balls?
We both of us got it wrong. Yeah. Like, I was down by one and you were above by one. And
that game was really hard, but, like, you definitely feel it. Like, you get it. Where it's like, it's definitely leaps and bounds ahead of like traditional rumble.
Just to me felt like there were a lot of little motors instead of one big one. I didn't feel like there were multiple balls in there. I don't know.
Maybe your hands are just wrong.
I felt that it was there, but it's like the rumble would kind of mix with each other. Like, when the balls were go off to the next side, it wasn't completely like if you were to actually have a box with little balls inside and toss it inside.
Maybe if I just wash my fingertips really good and drink a lot of green tea, I'll be able to feel the balls better.
Yeah. See? Nintendo Switch helping you get fit. That's the problem.
Switch fit.
I need to increase my ball feeling sensitivity.
Yes.
Okay, we need a game called Switchblade now for the Switch, where you knife fight people.
Holy shit. The little Joy-Cons are like the perfect size for that, though.
Switchblade.
They should have had that. I'm dead serious.
Yeah, yeah. You like shanking people, like I want to see a commercial,
actual like back alley knife fights.
I want to see a commercial, just like what's that? What thing where we're playing? What is it called with the Switch?
1-2 Switch.
1-2 Switch, where they do those classic commercials, and they have that like this. Oh, shank each other, and they have this like. Super nice, clean video about that, and you see like the parents saying "yay" as their kid like stab each other, like yeah.
It's like loading up the game, and like this, the like WarioWare quick text is like "fight for your life."
Everyone is like standing in front of a blank white background with red text that says "fight for your life." Fight for your life with your friends and family.
Fight for your life. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that would be good.
The possibilities are in. Truly, video games can finally become art. there are so many new storytelling mediums that video games have yet to explore. The famicide knife fight is a genre that we need to see more of in the future. Get on it, developers, but...
Yeah,
but get on it after these messages.
Switchblade.
Let's crack back inside.
Wait, I didn't get that at all.
That's not a thing that people say, George.
Let's crack back. I don't know. It could be. It doesn't make any less sense than like, let's hop back on, I get. I don't know.
Just go.
All right.
Just go.
I'm going to be silent for a second. Hello, welcome back to my house.
Whoa.
Yep.
Why did you get in here?
Why are you here?
why are you here to listen to me and my friends talk about the news on this week's TOVG podcast?
Studies show that this is the least listened to part of the podcast.
Actually, I think you're right. No, actually, studies have shown you literally the science actually has been done.
So let's talk about anything right now.
Yeah, actually, this is good because I think we have actual good discussion to have over some good news topics this week. Because Jimmy, I already know you have words to say about our first one.
It's a shame only 25% of our listener base will hear it.
I think I even have words to say about this first one. It is a shame that more than 25% of people can't hear about how lame the first pack of Breath of the Wild DLC is sounding.
Yep. So, okay.
Explain this to me, because this flew under my radar.
All right, let's quickly just make our way through
it. You got five categories.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And one of them sounds kind of cool. It's a trial that I guess pops up on some corner of the map, resembling the other corner map content trials, where you have to survive 45 rooms of combat, and you start off naked with no inventory, like how you do in Eventide Island.
Right.
But instead of that being a like survival, make your way to the waypoints and carry the orbs back to the beginning of the island trial, this is a straight up combat trial. 45 rooms of enemies, but no weapons other than what you can pick up from them dropping And also, I guess, no armor unless they would have that in chests in the dungeon for you. That sounds neato, I guess.
Sounds pretty fun to me.
Yeah, like a cute little gameplay variety challenge trial, like Eventide and all the labyrinths. And there was one really cool one above the Lost Woods. If you're playing through Zelda, go investigate the blob on top of the Lost Woods. It's a good one. But this harkens back to the like super good, super high quality trial challenges that Breath of the Wild didn't have enough of.
Yeah.
Like, this is totally a good nook for them to be filling with more stuff.
Yeah, I'm curious.
On the other hand, though, they have also released that much anticipated new map feature that everyone saw when they first revealed there was a season pass for this game. Remember how they had a new map feature listed on the bullet points of all the other features that your expansion pass would buy you? Well, that new map feature is called the Hero's Path, which displays a trail of your previously trodden 200 hours of gameplay. So it,
I think this is like pretty all right. It's like a fun thing. It's like a bonus.
This should be free. It's just a heat map.
Yeah.
It's the thing that happens at the end of every round of Splatoon. That doesn't cost a thing there that you've seen thousands of times before. And I guess all you do is like look back at your 200 hours of drawing a route through the map and be like, oh wow, I sure did spend a lot of time in Kakariko and Hitino in the first third of the game before evenly spreading myself out around the four corners like probably everyone's playthrough of Zelda sends them on.
Yeah, I vividly recall, I think it was Halo 3 or Reach. I think it was 3. Had a available heat map that tracks your stats on their website. Like if you just sign in with your Xbox profile on the Bungie site, you could just like look at all the multiplayer maps and like where you kill people the most and like your stats on it.
So you didn't have to pay $15.
Yeah.
Good. I guess actually right now you have to pay $30 for this stuff, don't you? Or was it $20?
I don't know. More than zero though.
So we also got the hard mode. The season pass is $20. $20 buys you hard mode, which is something I was really kind of optimistic and excited about, but maybe I shouldn't
instead
have been.
It's garbage.
What they do is have enemies get regenerating health to make them spongier. So they're going to take more whacks than usual, which is probably not something that's going to agree well on the upper echelons of the scaling with the weapon durability system.
Yeah, I can't wait to fight a Lynel for 8 hours.
And have to go through all of your inventory's weapons to get to the end there. I think I had to do that actually quite a few times in the game already at the major test of strength shrines.
Yep.
Yeah.
And in either case, it's not that great. Like in my playthrough, it felt like that was the one time where the weapon durability system was failing me. We're doing like that handful of major strength tests. And now having more fights like that around that are just testing more of your endurance rather than your reaction timing and your skill and your strategy, probably not the way to go about bumping this game up to a hard mode.
Also, on top of that, enemies start at a higher level and can have a higher maximum level. Yeah, so like red Bokoblins are blue by default. And there's like levels above the top ones.
And I like the idea of having a level that goes above the top one, which was silver, right?
Yeah, silver was the max one, I think.
But I'd want to get there when the time comes, not get there a step earlier.
Yeah, and even then, most of the levels up were just they did more damage and they had more hearts. So this just means everything does a little bit more damage, which is not even the problem of the difficulty in Breath of the Wild. Like,
yeah.
I was hoping for stuff like when you eat food, it doesn't regen immediately. It starts a timer that regens. Yeah. So you can't just like, oh, I'm down to one heart. Then better eat 50 apples.
Yeah.
Like, And then I forgot, me and a few friends were discussing this. I think the thing that I decided would have made this a little bit more like make it actually more interesting is make your divine beast powers regen after sleeping in a bed.
Okay.
Instead of over time, so that they are more akin to Dungeons and Dragons, like abilities that's like you could recover this after a long rest.
Yeah, rest to refill your magic.
Yeah, and so you get each of them once per day, so you still have those, but like they don't, you can't just like, oh well, I gotta get the next plate, I'll just stand here for 15 minutes while Rivali's Gale comes back. Like, it makes it so you have to use them tactically.
There's also a lot of very strange balance issues with Breath of the Wild that this hard mode doesn't really address or even work around. Mm-hmm. Like, one thing that I think would make a lot of sense, I saw a comment on this that really folds in line with my previous theory about how many gamepad features there originally building for this thing. Imagine how different the game would play if the game doesn't pause when you press the pause button and open up your inventory. Like that cuts out the pausing the game to eat 60 apples trick. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like just having all of that stuff down on the gamepad would be like such a nice equalizing force to the balance of the game. The cooking system would make more sense. The like inventory system in general would make more sense, because so much of that time that you spent gathering up ingredients for cooking and crafting would feel like they were being utilized a little more strategically if you would have to have some tension scrolling through those menus. I don't know. That would be neat. That sounds like a cool idea for a hard mode.
Hey, man, they really went lazy with this one. This is like an MMO where it's like, oh, they hit harder and they have more health. Like, that's not difficulty.
Yeah.
I was expecting some like really gameplay changes, like something with the weapons and stuff. Like,
well, to be fair, crafting. The big thing is the winter update. This is like the first and the smallest of the updates, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly. Right?
Oh, I just should be. That's typically how these things go.
Because I remember they're like, there'll be one thing right before summer, one thing in summer, and one thing in winter, right?
Yeah. There were,
so
there
this
were four
is the
seasons
smallest
to
of them.
The season pass. So you also got a travel medallion that'll mark one spot on the map as a placeable fast travel point.
That's neat if you're... That's like a neat mini feature, but like not paid for.
It also feels like something that probably could have been thrown in there.
Yeah.
There's some armor,
like these cosmetics,
and hats that are, yeah, meh. I mean, there's some like cute ones in
powers.
There, but one of them has powers. The Korok mask vibrates if you're near a Korok seed.
Great.
Which you probably are at all times.
It's like the fucking shrine counter. It's just like ding, 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 like the whole time. I turn that thing off immediately.
There are 900 Korok seeds in the game. That means that you're statistically likely to be close to one right now. Even in the actual world, you are probably close to a Korok seed.
I dig the Phantom Hourglass armor. That's pretty sick. And the Tingle outfit is hilarious, and I love that they like gave Link a noticeable shadowy bulge and a very defined butt in the Tingle outfit. I don't know. This stuff's alright. It's
also got
a very whelming
mask.
DLC.
Whelming, not under nor overwhelming. I'm a little underwhelmed, though. Like, the hard mode kind of breaks my heart.
That's what I was looking forward to.
Yeah,
I wanted it to be a gameplay switch up, not just like a pump the numbers, because that's what they do in all the Zeldas. They do Heroes mode, and it was like fine in A Link Between Worlds, because that like it felt like the difficulty, you know, it went up and it made it like, oh, I have to play more tactically now. But like in Breath of the Wild, since you run out of weapons, you're already playing tactically to use them better. doesn't help that enemies are just spongier and deal more damage, you know?
But it also could have been an opportunity for them to make higher level challenges more appropriate. Because the game has that real problem where once you like have more than 7 hearts, once nothing can one hit KO you anymore, the game becomes exponentially easier. It's not like, oh, I can now take 2 hits. It's now I can take as many hits as I want, because now that you can get... you can survive 1 one-shot KO, just pause the game and refill your hearts all the way up again, and you're good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyways, I hope Breath of the Wild ages better. Because that game could become the George game that everyone else seems to already have discovered out of it, if they tweak things like difficulty and timing a bit.
Hmm.
Speaking
of video games,
if you want to play other Zelda style video games, they're making another Darksiders.
Yeah, I'm happy. I haven't played 2 yet. I have it, but I haven't played it. But I really like Darksiders. It's like a fun, rompy, campy fucking hack and slash with Zelda dungeons in it, and I like it a lot.
I have not actually played any of these games, but I still like the fact that this news happened, because this seemed like a very unlikely sequel that still, I know, has been planned from the start. Like, they planned the whole thing out as a quadrilogy, right?
Or yeah, because the one horsemen. Game for each of the 4 horsemen.
Right.
I mean, they already did War. I think War is voiced by Liam O'Brien. Hang on. I gotta look this up, because he sounds like Illidan, and...
I really didn't get into the first one. I played, like, a good half of it, and just kind of like, eh.
Yeah, I mean, neither of them seemed to set the world on fire so much as just please people.
So,
I mean, this was years ago, too.
Yeah.
I've had, like, a video idea simmering on the edges that I don't really know how to tackle, but it's about borrowed game mechanics, and if that's actually a bad thing, because... Darksiders 1 is literally like, okay, it's Devil May Cry, but with Ocarina of Time's dungeons. Like, that is the game. You now know what the game is. But it has great visual design, in my opinion. It's very over-designed, but it's, like, very much the style of it. But, like, the dungeons are fun, and they, like, if you like Ocarina of Time 3D Zelda dungeons, you're just gonna like the Darksiders dungeons. They play the same. I really enjoyed the combat, and I like games that are like hack and slash where I can pick weapons to like tree into and kind of like choose my path and like what weapon I want to upgrade. It's very much like Ninja Gaiden Black, where you get your different weapons and you can just keep using the same one if you like it, you know?
Yep.
So yeah, I like Darksiders. My biggest problem was I kept trying to beat it on Apocalyptic difficulty, which is the highest one. It's like the 4th one, and it's a bad idea. I got halfway through, to my credit. I got far, but I'm going to play it again on a regular person difficulty, and then I'm going to play 2, because fucking death is dope.
Well, you know, on top of you having the problem of playing it on high difficulty, the devs had the problem of their publisher going bankrupt, which is like trying to make a game on high difficulty. So Darksiders, the planned quadrilogy, had to get put on hold for a while, but the pieces have been picked back up by Nordic Games, I believe. They've assembled a new team under the name of Gun Something or Others to make Darksiders 3, which mostly consists of members of the old game staff. Let's see, Gunfire Games is the name of the dev these days. The publisher is now called THQ Nordic.
Yeah, it's... The only thing that really is a little off-putting is... So the main character of this one is one of their made-up horsemen that they made for the world. Because the classic horsemen are War, Death, Conquest, and... Famine? Yeah. But they changed Famine and Conquest for Strife and Fury. And Fury at least looked really cool, and they changed her, like, completely. She looks super different, and I don't know if I like the redesign, but...
They changed her for this installment, or...?
Yeah, and in previous times when you see her in the series, she does not look exactly like this. It's not the worst thing in the world, but it's like, it is a noticeable difference. I don't know. I'm excited for this. I'm going to play the other two while I wait for it. Glad to see that, like, the remnants of THQ aren't completely wiped off the map, because they have made a ton of great IPs, and I want their IPs to continue being. When's the next Battle Tanks?
The next Battle Tanks may be a way off, but the next installment of Nintendo's 3DS line is out any minute now, I believe.
Wait, what?
So did you guys see how angry people got that they announced the 2DS XL?
Yeah, I did. I don't get why people are angry.
I guess because it has a dumb name. I don't know. That's like the one all of them valid have a dumb reason, name. I think. But other than that, the product seems fine. I mean, it's like a bigger version of the 2DS that's a little more expensive, I believe. Let's see. It's a $150 machine. How much is the 2DS going for these days?
At launch, the 2DS, I believe, was $99.
Yeah, it was a super cheap one without having your kids break the, you know, cracking it in half, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I really like this thing's design, though. The new 2DS XL looks, like, really sleek.
But why, though? But why?
Why not?
it fills a hole that was not there before. I mean, if
what
you want a cheaper 3DS that's as big as the big 3DS, but a little cheaper because it doesn't have the 3D that not a lot of games use anyway, there you go.
Yeah, honestly, like, I would probably, if posed with it now, purchase a 2DS XL instead of a 3DS XL, because all of the games that use 3D, I never used it on. I used it very sparingly. Yeah. And most of the games that I did use it on, it tanked their performance.
Yeah.
Like,
and
Pokemon.
It's
like
$350.
Pokemon. Yeah, Pokemon tanked it. Ooh.
Dude.
Wow.
Fucking. Yeah. God. That's still upsetting how bad frame rate in battles is in
Holy
Pokemon.
Crap.
Even just not using 3D.
Yeah. I did not know that the 3DS XL was $350.
I don't think I got mine for that much. I got
350.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Amazon page now.
Which version are you looking at? Are you looking at a special edition?
It's blue/black.
It should be like 250 the most.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure 250 is on mark.
If that is the case, then making a $150 version makes sense.
I have a
Pikachu
DS
version.
XL.
It's like 230. Yeah, I think I might have been looking at maybe new they were that much.
I don't think that they were ever $350.
I was on a weird page.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, regardless, for some anecdotal evidence that this might be a smart move for Nintendo, it's kind of showing that they're not ready to completely phase out the 3DS yet. I mean, it is one of the most popular consoles of all time, so I completely understand. But I have a couple friends who bought the original 2DS when it came out around the same time that Smash 4 came out, so that they could play some of the games. They got like Mario Kart 7 and Smash and such. And those same friends saw the new 2DS XL, and a couple of them were like, yeah, I might like pick it up and try and go through a backlog of 3DS games now that I have so many to choose from, which is like, just free money in Nintendo's pocket for releasing a much cheaper version of a console that will allow people to play games like, you know, even if they want to play one of those, the Xeno fucking Shulk game. I don't know.
Xeno.
That one that only went on
XL. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the six games that worked only on the XL version of the console. Now they can do that and they don't have to shell out, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, I get when I think about it that way, I guess it's fine, you know, for like the last release, you know, just fix all the problems, you know, no one uses 3D anyway. I firmly believe that.
Honestly, the only time I've ever used 3D was fucking around in Flipnote.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, no one uses 3D, and then because I definitely never used it. Like it was a gimmick. I turned it on for literally like 5 minutes to look at a scene, and then I turned it right back off. That's like the most curiosity. Is basically mm-hmm. what that button is there for me, or slider, should I say. So yeah, I guess I could see just to have like that end product and they don't have to worry about like shipping all the other products. Yeah, just have this one last product and they have all this backlog where they can sell out of and then eventually switch over to the Switch as their main sauce.
Yeah.
Main sauce, which I hope they do because that's, I love having a nice handheld to play games on. So, but yeah.
Yeah, I feel like this is Nintendo sort of being like, they know that they're going to phase in the Switch completely eventually, but they're still taking it cautiously for the time being and kind of keeping the 3DS in the wings.
Mm.
So I think it's smart business on their part. I would like one of these, if not just for how fucking clean it looks. Like, I love the blue black color scheme, like the button colors and everything. I'm not going to buy one because I hardly use my 3DS as it is right now, but it is a pretty neat little piece of hardware.
Yeah.
The only thing that I think is a little fishy about this is that it means they're still keeping the stupid name for the 3DS line going. This is something like the eighth iteration of the 3DS, and the names don't get any easier to juggle. Like, I think I'm looking at an Amazon page for something that's $350, and I, for whatever reason, cannot tell why it's a different product than a different Amazon page that's $277. Maybe it's because it's a new 3DS. Maybe it isn't. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I'm looking at the same page.
The names are really confusing.
This is a third-party seller, isn't it?
No, this is... Maybe that's why.
Is it?
Yeah.
It says Nintendo.
When you click to show everything, it and all the new, let's see, yeah, it's just all
browsing
third party
sellers.
These things
is harder than it should be.
Yeah, it's all third party sellers. So Amazon has like different sellers on there, and if they get sold out, if like Amazon gets sold out,
gotcha,
and they're not carrying it anymore, then all you have is third party sellers left.
I see this. The funny thing about this page as well that George linked is that you can go, so this is not the new 3DS XL, this is the regular 3DS XL, and you can scroll down and it says there's a, or not scroll down, but right there next to it, it says there's a newer version of this item, new Nintendo 3DS XL Black. You click to that, the sellers are typically around the $200 range. So it's one guy jacking up the price and fucking up the thing for everybody, is what it is.
Sometimes you can tell when you look at the used and you see that the used is $131, you can tell that obviously it's an inflated price for people who want a new, a new old 3DS.
Okay, I gotcha. All right, let's dive out of that one and instead placidly dip our toes into the much calmer, less conflict-ridden waters of anime fandoms.
Okay.
So the latest EVE Online World War is being fought over whether or not to ban anime forever on one of the Discord channels of one of the bigger gaming communities in the EVE Online world.
Okay.
Oh, so they just wanted to waste money? Is that what this is about?
I don't know. It's
like
about
real
whether...
money that they're wasting there. That's like real ships.
What do you mean wasting when they're delivering it to a cause that will preserve the freedom and sanctity of anime? Okay, I need to explain because this is a story.
Okay.
So you have an EVE Online clan-style group called the Waffle Alliance. They have a Discord channel that got flooded with so much anime that one of the admins decided they were going to ban it from their main channel.
during a podcast, this admin, alongside another guy named Jinton, who is a community-elected CCP Games ambassador, had an argument about anime and whether or not the ban made sense. Quote from a PC Gamer summary of this drama, Riza explains that while CVA is sitting on some valuable territory, Jintan's corpse are very publicly disrespected his anime-loving tendencies, which were just what Riza needed to justify in an invasion.
Okay.
Invasion! So after seeing the rift that anime was causing throughout the ranks of the CCP Games EVE Online community, Riza decided to weaponize it. During the State of the Waffles address to announce the invasion of Providence, Riza told his soldiers that if they killed Jintan 10 times and brought them 10 corpses from the wreckage, they would lift the ban on anime.
Wow.
Okay.
However, the plot thickens. He also announced that if they kill this guy 20 times and bring the corpse over 20 times, the ban on anime is going to be made permanent.
What the fuck is this game?
So there's like now conflicting groups within the same communities fighting EVE Online wars against each other in order to collect on the bounties of someone from a rival group in order to either lift the ban on anime or permanently ban anime forever.
Wow.
Oh boy.
Wow.
And PC Gamer's News from the Front concludes the article by somberly looking out at the wreckage and saying, it's not clear how large World War Weeb will grow as the conflict is just beginning to catch fire. Riza is convinced that Waffles will be able to push Cortez Verteres and its allies out of Providence. Considering Waffles is allied with Pandemic Legion, one of the more formidable armies in EVE, this could be a very real possibility.
This is...
They must
life imitates
bored.
Art, man. Life imitates art.
Yeah, I boredom.
I don't know. I have nothing to say. The story speaks for its goddamn self. I have nothing to input on this.
Yeah.
That they get into the territories of the thing. Quote, yes, I think the south where Providence is will be on fire, Riza says. There are many smaller conflicts happening and it's heating up. There's potential for a southern war in the next months. Which means that the anime war could balloon to other wars.
It definitely will, because it's money. It's so much money that they pay for this game, for these ships. I can't imagine. Holy crap. Like, just for anime. Like, someone loses, like...
Full circle.
Thousands of dollars on an anime fight. The anime war of 2017.
It's...
Do you remember the anime war of 2017?
For your anime, how much of your life are you willing to put down to fight for the freedom of your anime?
I guess $1,000.
Speaking of going full circle, last but not least, the world has gone back around in reverse to the bizarre conditions of Half-Life's original launch in the German market. So... Valve has released a piece of DLC on the market of the German version of Half-Life Steam page that uncensors it, quote unquote, for the German audience, unlocking the game's original blood and gore effects. Also, as a fun note, the friendly fire for what it looks like when you shot one of the scientists in the German version of Half-Life has them just like sit down on the ground and look sad.
What the
okay
heck?
Yeah, I'll send you guys a link in our own Discord chat over what happens when you shoot a scientist in the German version of Half-Life.
All right.
But that's worth a look. He just kind of sits on the ground and shakes his head.
oh
yeah, he actually does that.
Wow,
poor guy. He looks really sad. He's and upset that you shot him.
Yeah, he's upset for the paint. He lost the paintball match, basically. Oh
yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, now there's a piece of DLC called Half-Life Uncensored on the market that
They say is now available to users age 18 plus in Germany. If you already own Half-Life on Steam, activate Half-Life and start playing the uncensored version of the game right away. Which I guess means that they're calling it 18 plus. So I'm wondering if this version of Half-Life just like could not be released in Germany at all, or if it would have actually had to get our equivalent of the AO rating.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It probably has something to do with that.
Because like German video game rating standards are really weird. Like the German version of TF2 is classic, where party hats and confetti spills out of people's wounds. That's just good, clean humor. Anyways, that's all I got for you, unless you guys got something else.
No, I think I'm all video gamed out for the decade.
But you still haven't played through all six endings of Near a Tomato.
Well,
near a tomato.
Yeah.
Are you near a tomato?
Parallel to a tomato.
Yeah.
If you're near a tomato right now, tell us about it.
Take a picture and hashtag it near a tomato.
Send it to youtube.com/bunnyhobshow so I can see it.
or tweet it at SunderCR. So I can see it.
Or tweet it at, it's very hard to spell, so I'll spell it out for you. There you go.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Let's go jump out the window
tribes.
Now.
Yeah, I'm going to go find a tomato to be near.
And then what?